This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. 95 years ago, the Detroit Institute of Arts was in deep, deep financial trouble. It kept its doors open by turning over the building and its art to the thriving city of Detroit in exchange for annual funding. And now it stands poised to flip that arrangement upside down, hoping to cut Detroit's ownership of the DIA in order to protect its treasures from hungry creditors. There's quite a long, complicated history between the DIA and the city of Detroit. Yet, despite nearly a century tied together, the reaction of Detroiters to the proposed spinoff of the DIA is pretty muted. Certainly a lot different than the reaction when the state took over operations of Belle Isle. Detroit Free Press writer Mark Stryker recently explored this, giving us the past, present, and the future of the DIA's predicament. Good to have you with us, Mark.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So you kind of give us a real good sense that this so-called grand bargain, if it all comes together, kind of hits the reset button for the DIA and takes us back 95 years.
In a lot of ways, it does, because it would restore the museum to independent operations away from city ownership, and it would essentially set up an operating structure that is like every other major American museum in the country. That's one of the things that's so unique about this situation, is the DIA's ownership arrangement with the city of Detroit is unique, and it is precisely because the city technically owns the building and the art that the museum's collection finds itself in the crosshairs of creditors to begin with. So as I wrote over the weekend, in some ways, it is both a radical and a conservative move. It would be conservative to the extent that this just is restoring the sort of normalcy that all museums have. And yet it would be radical here in Detroit, because it would be for the first time in a century, the museum would be spun off from the city, and that's a big deal.
And as you point out in your piece for the Free Press, that this does raise some, as you call them, potentially thorny issues for Detroit's political leaders.
It does. You know, the city political leaders, whose predominantly African-American constituents, you know, sort of have long feared that Detroit's financial troubles would, you know, become a pretext for stripping the city of many of its most important assets and valuable assets, could raise a ruckus over this. They haven't as of yet, and we can talk about why that is. It's very interesting.
Yes.
But it is important and interesting to remember that 20 years ago, when the museum was negotiating an operating agreement with the city, which essentially transferred daily operations of the museum from the city itself to the museum staff and its board, when that was going on 20 years ago, there were huge outcries over the possibility of the notion of the city, you know, sacrificing its greatest treasures, its crown jewels, to white interest in the suburbs. And we have heard none of that this time around. And remember, 20 years ago, we were only talking about transferring daily operation, not actual ownership. And today we're talking about actual ownership.
Yes.
So it's a much more radical shift, and yet we've had almost no outcry to this point.
Yes. In fact, you talked to people for your story for the Free Press, and it's a pretty muted reaction. Certainly nothing like the reaction when Belle Isle was leased to the state of Michigan. So what's behind that, do you think?
Well, I think there are a lot of things. People are used to the notion of a DIA operating separate from the city. You know, people recognize that the DIA and its collection will not be leaving the city. They're prohibited by this bargain that we've been talking about from doing so. People are scared of the alternative of possibly losing the masterpieces to the highest bidder. The relief of pensioners is a much more important issue for most people, and that's baked into the plan that would effectively give the DIA its independence. And as far as Belle Isle goes, you know, that's an asset that more people have a closer relationship in many ways. Most average Detroiters, let's say, have a closer relationship with Belle Isle than they do with the DIA. And so there was much greater concern over the possibility of losing that asset than the DIA.
I'm speaking with Detroit Free Press writer Mark Stryker, who recently explored the DIA's grand bargain in a piece for the Free Press. What's the latest on this $815 million grand bargain It was all cobbled together by federal judge Gerald Rosen between foundations and the DIA and the state. And you're saying the paint has certainly not dried.
No, by no means. So let's remind people what this is all about. Judge Rosen has helped spearhead a $815 million rescue fund that is aimed at softening the pension cuts and at the same time would safeguard the art. What's happened is that national and local charitable foundations have pledged $365 million. The DIA itself has agreed to raise $100 million. And there is a proposal in front of the state legislature right now to match those funds with $350 million from the state, but that needs state approval. Mm-hmm. And all of that money, in effect, would funnel into pensions over the next 20 years to mitigate against the cuts that would be that are in fact being proposed under Kevin Orr's plan of adjustment.
Sure, so, and this isn't saying that it would eliminate them. It would just somewhat soften the blow for the pensioners, wouldn't it?
Correct. But there's a lot that still has to be done here. The pension representatives so far have balked at the financial concessions that they're being asked, and they're balking at the management oversight that would be part of the deal. And until they agree to the $815 million that are on the table, there's no deal. At the same time, there's $350 million from the state, and there needs to be state legislative approval, and that's a political issue, and it's an election year. And even though the governor has made the proposal himself and he's lobbying his own party, there is resistance, particularly from outstate Republicans, to in effect feel as if they are bailing out Detroit. So you've got election year politics on the one hand, you got the pensions that are sitting there looking at $815 million and wondering, okay, is bird in the hand worth two in the bush? And they could take the money that's on the table, but they could also sort of wait and say, well, wait a minute, we've appealed the pension cuts on the grounds that pensions can't be cut due to the state constitution, and we're waiting for that. And if we win there, maybe we don't have to accept any cuts. It's not clear what would happen there, and there are many experts that think that's a long shot for them, but still there is hope. And so you've got a lot of complicated interlocking factors here and agendas, and it's we're sort of everybody's watching everybody else to see what happens, and there's no deal until everybody's in.
It kind of reminds me of a Michigan version of a House of Cards episode because
there's absolutely
so many pieces. And as we remember, the issue of whether pensions can be cut and whether they're protected by the Constitution, Judge Stephen Rhodes already laid down his decision on that. He said Constitution does not protect it. So that's why they're off appealing. The pension boards are off appealing that decision. So there's just so many pieces trying to fit together here.
Yes. And it really is one of these situations where, you know, nobody's in till everybody's in. And so everybody's sort of watching each other, and there's pressure being applied from all kinds of places in all kinds of ways. Meanwhile, let's remember that the DIA itself is kind of on the side here, watching all of this play out as its fate is sort of being determined in large part by others. Now, at this point, the DIA has its own lawyers at the table, and they're working out the details of how the independence would be set up. But, you know, for months and months and months, the DIA was kind of on the outside looking in, watching people play with, in some ways, their irreplaceable masterpieces.
And let's not forget, as you point out in your piece, creditors have not given up hopes of getting something out of the DIA. They're kind of circling around waiting for what?
Well, this is absolutely the other big unanswered question is the creditors are looking at what are billions of dollars worth of art in the museum and saying, you can't leave all that on the table. Essentially, you know, what Kevin Orr in his plan of adjustment and what this grand bargain has done is it's basically said, okay, we have $815 million that we are going to put into the pot on behalf of the museum. We're covering the museum with $815 million, and the creditors are saying, whoa, wait a minute, there's a lot more money worth of art in the museum, and we should have access to that. And so that's the argument they're going to make in court, and it will be up to Judge Stephen Rhodes to decide whether or not, in fact, $815 million is covers enough of the art that he will allow that, or, in fact, if that isn't fair and doesn't represent what the art is worth. And that gets into questions of whether or not the judge even thinks that the art can be sold or monetized or not. And that's a whole other set of legal questions. So, again, on that front, you've got a lot of unanswered questions, too.
Detroit Free Press writer Mark Stryker, thank you so much for the great putting it all in perspective exercise for us with the DIA grand bargain. Thank you so much, Mark.
My pleasure. Thank you.